Welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery. Why, it's a surprise for everyone. It's Christmas time.
What? 'Tis Christmas time, you say?
Why, 'tis, my dear sweet boy.
Oh, Kalu Kalay.
Oh, Frabjous Day, Kalu Kalay.
Indeed.
Someone has slain the Jabberwock.
Oh, the Momraths do celebrate Christmas this day. Look how they gyre and jimble.
So, I am John. That over there was Jeff.
Hi.
It's time for Movie Mastery. We're doing some Christmas stuff. This year, we're doing a Bad Dad's Christmas.
Yeah, welcome to Bad Dad Christmas. We were going to call it Shitty Dad Christmas, but I think this probably is more marketable.
Well, it's more marketable and it rhymes, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't know how else we were going to get that in there.
Yeah.
Father of a shitty kitty. Don't hang on. That's like a cat would be bad.
Father of a shitty kitty.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Wait, hang on. Isn't that just sung to the tune of the Owner of a Lonely Heart
Father
song?
Of a shitty kitty, much better than the...
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. So, yeah, it's the Bad Dad Christmas because so many Christmas movies are about bad dads.
It is a weird trend in Christmas movies to be very much about, like, dads that aren't good enough or dads that are too focused on something that isn't Christmas.
Basically, it seems like 90% of Christmas movies in the last 20 years, not counting Hallmark Christmas movies, are about a dad who either isn't Christmasing hard enough or is Christmasing too hard.
Well, Christmasing in the wrong way.
Yes, they aren't Christmasing right, and it's causing problems in the family.
Yeah, you very, very rarely get anything besides some shitty dad. The fact that a bad mom's Christmas exists is honestly, to me, it's nice. It's nice to see some equal representation in the shitty parent Christmas.
I mean, really, if you think about the history of Christmas movies, how many are there where a mom is failing the family in some nebulous, stupidly defined way? Like, I can't think of any that are comedic, like all the dad ones. You've got like 1985's One Magic, or I don't know if 1985, what the fuck ever. It's One Magic Christmas, which is just like some misery porn Christmas about a lady who's like,
well, anytime
poor.
You have moms in a Christmas movie, it's almost always a mom that is sad because she can't provide enough.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I wish I had enough money to give my kids the Christmas they want.
In any other situation, they're married and the husband is off doing ridiculous bullshit and they're limited to saying one of like three things. You know, you aren't thinking enough about the children, or you're never at home, or, you know, how much did that cost? And that's all they're allowed to say.
Yeah, it's very nebulous Christmas-related things, and they either get to be supportive and put upon, or like very angry and put upon.
Now, this isn't something we're coming to from nowhere, because we've watched a lot of Christmas movies over the years.
Over the years, we've seen our fair share of Christmas.
And one thing we've come to terms with is that most Christmas movies are about shitty dads, even the ones that we've specifically watched, just the two of us already. Like, I don't know, think of any one of them. Jack Frost, which we did a long, long time ago. The Michael Keaton is a snowman movie. Now, that's one where the here's another thing about these that's often a problem for us. The bad dadness of them is often so minor that it's weird that everyone's mad at them.
It's the movie will try and be like, yo, this dad is awful.
Yeah.
And it wants to convince you of that. And yet when you deconstruct the movie, you're like, oh, this is just a dad. Like, a lot of the times when you have let's do a non-Christmas one, like, say, the Hook. Hook, where, you know, Peter Pan as a dad is supposed to be an awful dad because he's too into business.
Yeah,
he's
too
a business,
business
dad and
yeah.
He businesses too hard. But a lot of the time you're like, look, dude, it's his job. It's not like, oh, what an awful parent. It's just, this guy does business. That's his job.
Yeah, yeah. In the Michael Keaton movie, in Jack Frost, it's, he's a blues musician and he's really struggling to provide for the family because, you know, no one wants a fucking farty blues musician. But he gets a gig and it's for like 3 hours on Christmas Eve. Not even on Christmas, but on Christmas Eve. And his son, like, straight up throws the family harmonica at him and stomps off all grumpy. Like,
ah, the family harmonica.
Yeah, there's a fucking harmonica that gets passed. It's magic. It turns his dad into a snowman. And he's like, how dare, don't even bother coming home on Christmas if you're going to work on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
He's like, what is, there's this expectation in a lot of these movies that during the week leading up to Christmas, you need to be home 100% of the time playing catch in the yard with your son or you're terrible at dadding.
Oh, yeah. Now, as the son of a pastor, I'm like, man, I don't understand that, because for me, that is like 100% my dad's busiest time.
Yeah.
And no one's going to be like, oh, fuck you, your dad's awful because he's working too much on Christmas because he's a goddamn pastor.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, so he gets a pass because he's doing religious stuff, but anyone else who works during the holidays, the worst.
Okay, well, my dad was a manager. He's retired now, but he was the manager of a Trader Joe's for 40 years. And so, of course, he worked the day before Christmas and the day after Christmas my entire childhood.
Yeah, obviously.
So, and here's what I did. I got used to it because we were done with Christmas by like 10:30 in the morning on Christmas Day anyway. You wake up, you open your presents, you eat a delicious Lebkuchen or whatever it is your mom made because she cooks German food all the time. And then by 10:30 in the morning, I was bedecked with cool new presents outside playing with my Jew homies.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things in these movies is there's a lot of points where they're like, oh, you don't spend enough time with the kids during the holidays. I'm like, do you know how little your kid gives a fuck about spending time with you during the holidays?
It is the
second they open Christmas presents, they're like, great, I'm going to go play with these. I do not give a fuck about you. Good day, sir.
Yeah, the only movie that ever got that right is A Christmas Story, which John's only seen once and knows that it's boring in his worldview. But that part, the Christmas morning part of A Christmas Story, is dead on.
Yeah, it's, oh boy, we got presents, bye.
And then the two parents are like on the couch going like, oh God, it's so... Christmas fucking sucks. Just, oh, bowling ball, whatever. And then the two kids are literally passed out from playing too hard. And that's right.
Yeah.
That got it.
Now, the movie for this week, because we haven't even said the name yet, is Deck the Halls.
2004, I think?
Six.
Six? 2006 is Deck the Halls, starring Matthew Broderick and Danny DeVito as our titular crappy Christmas dads.
These are our bad dads for the week.
Each of them has a lesson to learn.
We are going to be back and diving deep into why these dads are bad after this music for Deck the Halls.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly, fa la 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 la. Don't we now our gay apparel, fa la 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 la. Control the ancient tide careful, fa la 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 la.
So these bads dads.
These dads of bad, these totally bad dudes who are...
Are they a bad enough dad to save Christmas?
So, first of all, I wanted to ask you a question, John. What are we doing here? Is this our next episode has to be a live one from the movie theater anyway, and it's probably going to be like Ready Player One.
Oh, it's Jumanji.
It's Jumanji.
It's straight up Jumanji. It is winning so handily.
So how are we going to make a bad dad's Christmas a thing? Do we have to do a few more extra episodes or something?
I mean, we might throw out a bonus one.
Okay, that's probably how we're going to make this into an actual event that we're doing then.
Oh, I think we're going to do a straight up Christmas event as a surprise for our listeners.
Okay.
I mean, they know we're doing it, but what we're doing, that's the surprise.
All right, so get ready for a surprise, everybody. It won't be announced today. The titular dads of badness, Matthew Broderick as
Steve Finch.
Yeah, Steve Finch. And then Danny DeVito as
Danny Hall.
Danny Hall.
You see, because the Halls move in next door and they're so annoying that you might want to deck the halls.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I didn't even put that together.
Come on, man, you got to put that together. This movie is garbage.
That is atrocious. All right, so basically, here are the different types of Christmas malady that each one of the dads of this movie is suffering from. And by the way, do they have families? Of course they do. We'll get into that. But Steve Finch...
We'll spend about as much time with that families as the movie does, which is to say, let's check in with them briefly, we're done.
We'll tell you who they are and what their deal is. So Steve Finch is a man who was moved around. He was an army brat growing up. And so his parents moved him around all the time at Christmas, and he never got to have any real Christmas traditions.
Yeah, he's super sad that... When he was a kid, Christmas was just like, you wake up and you eat some French fries and, like, maybe there's a present and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't Christmas hard enough as a kid.
Yeah. So he's obsessed with a regular uniform Christmas. He needs to, every day all December long, because he's got a big wooden advent calendar, is a magic event that you have to do on that specific day in a very regimented fashion.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, this day is putting up the wreath. This day is putting up the tree. This day is lights. You know,
yeah.
The whole thing is I have tried to make as many traditions as possible.
Yes. Now, his family, his put-upon sad family, consists of Kristen Davis, or the youngest member of Sex and the City,
yep,
as his wife. His son, who is some nobody, who is a little 10-year-old boy who starts the movie by saying he's having a midlife crisis, kind of. He's like...
Well, basically, he starts off and he's like, oh, I don't even know what's going on with my life. I'm already 10 and I haven't diversified my portfolio.
So,
like, shit like that.
Okay, so what we're getting from him is a young, Michael J. Fox archetype from that one show.
Like, we're basically just getting kids these days, they want to worry about their future instead of worrying about playing in Christmas.
They're so savvy that they spend time talking about their stock portfolios all the time between checking their electronic mail-em-a-bobs.
Oh, these kids and their TVs and their cellular phones.
With their who's-em-a-guts-its and their what's-its. And then his daughter, 15 in this movie, Alia Shawkat, who you'd remember as Maybe Bluth.
Yeah. Now, before this movie started at all, we knew nothing about it going in, and I was like, oh man, I can't wait to watch a movie about a dad that is bad at Christmas, his put-upon wife, his son that wants to spend time with him, and his teenage daughter that does not want anything to do with him. The movie started, and that is exactly what it was.
Yeah, this family could not be more boilerplate. You've got a boring but pleasant wife, you've got a weird dad with a Christmas problem, you've got a little boy who's like, Dad, I just want to spend time with you, although that doesn't show up till about three quarters of the way into the film.
Yeah. Yeah, they forgot to put that on there, but it is definitely, I'm the young kid and I got things for Christmas that I want to do, and yeah. I like Christmas and dads.
So the thing that really bugs me about the son is that it feels a lot like they start one arc in the movie and then finish a completely different one.
Yeah, when he starts out, the son almost seems like he's going to be one of those dad archetypes where it's like, oh, I'm too concerned with stuff that isn't Christmas.
Yeah.
And I'm not concerned with being enough about like being a kid. I haven't realized that being a kid's all about having fun and I don't need to worry about the future.
Yeah. Like, Dad, can I please have stocks in Microsoft for Christmas? And, you know, Matthew Broderick has to be like, no, son, you're getting a ball.
You get a bike like a regular kid.
Yeah, and then he goes, oh, wow, a bike! And then that solves his problem. But by the end of the movie, he's instead obsessed with spending time with his dad because they needed to kind of drive home the dad arc.
Well, they had to, because they were like, oh, wait a minute, that's right. The entire, like, template for how to make one of these movies is the young son has to be like, Dad, why aren't you spending time with me? And yeah. So we had to do that with this kid.
So this kid has two arcs. He starts one and finishes a different one. Meanwhile, Alia Shawkat is the complete bog standard 15-year-old teenage girl who wants nothing to do with her family or Christmas.
Yeah, it's everything that this family does is embarrassing, and all I can do is roll my eyes and say ugh.
Yeah, and then you got Kristen Davis, who she edits cookbooks, and she kind of hints in the very beginning of the movie that her arc is going to be that she is dissatisfied with editing cookbooks. She wants to write one.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they go to bed. And who should show up in the middle of the night but the loudest truck in the universe?
They get so mad that this moving truck is in. He's like, oh, whoever's moving in the middle of the night with that big loud truck, you know that they're schlubs. And I go, dude, it's not their truck.
Yeah,
it is a moving truck.
They don't own a moving truck. That's some moving truck's fault. That's... either they got jerked around on a rental, or they hired a moving company that is using a shitty truck, but you can't put this on the family.
Yeah, and also, way to be super classist about it, like, say the only moving company they could afford a truck for was a company that just had shitty trucks that made a lot of noise and had that backfire nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's still not a thing where it's like, that family is bad because they cannot afford a better truck.
What they can still afford is a 3-bedroom with no next-door neighbors in some part of forested, I forget where they were specifically. They said it at one point. It was...
I have no idea.
It was like Massachusetts, I think. It was like a beautiful neighbor. He was their only neighbor.
Yeah.
That was the thing. They were like, oh, the only neighbor we have is an across-the-street neighbor because there's no one on either side of Danny DeVito's house.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the house, because a big thing is going to be aerial views of these houses, there's no one around. It's just like these two houses and that's it.
Yeah, so I can tell you they may have used a shitty moving truck, but they are rich as fuck.
Yeah. And so the Halls move in, and our introduction to the Halls outside of just, you know, them moving in the middle of the night is Danny DeVito shows up the next morning and gets caught, like, trying to steal the paper from Matthew Broderick's doorstep. And then, you know, he tries to play it off as like, oh, I was just getting the paper for you, and they have a stupid introduction, but basically what happens at the end of it is he steals Matthew Broderick's coffee cup and coffee and paper.
Yes. And we get to meet at least the parents of the Hall family, which is Danny DeVito, who is a salesman who his big problem is that he's never satisfied anywhere he goes because he never does anything big enough.
He's always switching jobs and switching where he lives, and it's because he never finds anything that makes him happy. Every time he's like, look, I can sell anything to anyone. I can sell the iced Eskimos and I'm great at doing whatever, but boy howdy, I can never find something I'm happy about. out.
And his wife, it's Kristen Chenoweth, taking the job that she gets these days because Amy Sedaris got too old, which is...
trashy blonde.
Trashy blonde trophy, or former trophy wife.
Yeah.
It's the job that Kristen Chenoweth appears to have been born to play. So she pops up and she's like, well, hey there, don't let him steal your paper. I've got a push-up bra, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and so she's there and
her big obsession for the course of the film is that she wants to settle down somewhere and just...
She's tired of moving around.
Yeah, yeah. So right away we get the sparks flying between Mr. Finch and Mr. Hall because Danny DeVito is gruff and apparently just a thief.
We are supposed to get a very odd couple vibe of like, oh, Matthew Broderick's so uptight, but Danny Hall, oh, Danny DeVito's doing his best impression of like being a sloppy guy like he is in every single fucking thing ever.
Yeah, with the problem being that, you know, at the end of this scene, he has stolen all of Matthew Broderick's stuff.
Yeah.
So when you're like, I like this guy, he's fun and schlubby, you're like, no, he's a
literal thief.
He's a sleazy thief.
Like, the movie has this thing where it keeps wanting to present both of them as the hero and the villain at the same time. So anytime you get, like, these redemption moments throughout the film, you then immediately get a scene following it where one of these two is an asshole.
Well, I think my favorite thing that recurrently happens in the movie is when Danny DeVito does something illegal or just mean, and then, you know, something horrible happens to Matthew Broderick as a result, he gets mad, and then everyone in the world gets mad at him because... Because look how sad Danny DeVito is.
Yeah.
That's the thing that keeps happening. Danny DeVito's like, hi, tricked you into doing something stupid and expensive. And Broderick's like, well...
You're an asshole.
You're an asshole. And DeVito's like, aww.
Oh, you called me an asshole. And everyone's like, oh, how dare you?
How dare you be mean to that Christmas vagabond?
Look at that weird Christmas gnome.
Look at that horrible miscreant who just fucking cost you $40,000 and nearly killed you. How dare you be mean to him? Don't you know it's December 22nd?
Yeah, so the big thing with Matthew Broderick in this movie is not only is he very much about the Christmas traditions for his house, but he's also very big on Christmas for the town. Like, he's supposed to be the Christmas guy. When we first meet him, like, the mayor is putting up the town's Christmas tree, and he's asking him what he thinks about what's going on with the decorations and what's going to happen with Winter Festival and whatnot.
Oh, by the way, he is also an ophthalmologist. That's the very first thing we learn in the movie.
Yeah, he's an eye doctor, and that does not matter at all.
Until the very, very end of the film, it doesn't matter in the slightest.
Well, even then it doesn't matter.
Even then, it's a total throwaway. But yeah, so he's an ophthalmologist. He's also like the chairman of the town Christmas festival or something.
Well, he never does anything for the festival. It's just people associate him with Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because throughout this entire film, he never does fucking anything for the town for Christmas.
Well, I mean, notably, the whole, let's just get this out of the way. The whole grand conflict in this movie is about outdoor Christmas lights. And Finch's house doesn't even have any. They're not part of his regimented Christmas scheme.
Oh, he gets some by the end, but it's like, oh, there's a day where we have to put up lights, I'm sure.
Well, whatever. He is not especially Christmassy for someone who is supposed to be associated with Christmas in the entire town. Mostly he just has fussy, stuck-up opinions about things, and that appears to be good enough. So when they're like, what do you think of the lights on this Christmas tree? He's like, oh, let's tone down some of the baubles on it. It looks trashy.
And the odd thing is, for someone who's supposed to be so Christmased up, he is very, very little Christmas, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
But the reason that the Halls get so super into putting lights up, which is going to be the main conflict here,
yeah,
is Danny DeVito...
His daughters find Google Maps.
Yeah, basically find the Google Earth.
Yeah.
And they can't see their house on Google Earth. And he gets real angry because, oh, Danny DeVito always feels like he's invisible and no one really gives him the recognition he deserves.
Man, I can't imagine that's true. If I ever came across a wild Danny DeVito, I'd be like, holy shit, a talking refrigerator box.
Oh my God, that weird lawn gnome is talking to me. I don't know what's happening.
Who shaved Gimli? I mean, I guess we probably shouldn't spend all of our time making fun of Danny DeVito for being short and weird. He's certainly an amazing actor who is hilarious and famous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, but I love Danny DeVito.
The weird thing is, the movie also presents us with Danny DeVito as being hyper competent at his job.
Oh yeah, he's the world's greatest salesman.
Yeah, when he goes to work, he's now working at a car dealership in the town, and the other car guys at the dealership are like, oh, we're going to pull a prank on him where we're going to bet him he can't sell a car to this guy outside, and it turns out the guy out there is the owner of the dealership. So Danny DeVito goes out there, and of course, when he comes back in, he's like, well, I'll accept all that money on my desk by the end of the day. Goodbye.
No checks.
And it's like the dealer, the guy who owns the dealership comes in and he's like, I don't know what just happened. I bought a car from my own dealership. And the worst part is I paid sticker for it. And you're like, oh, wow. Danny DeVito is fucking hyper amazing at his job.
It also helps you to establish the level of realism to be expected from this movie, because he's like, yeah, I'll bet you each $1,000 I can sell that guy a car. And then they're all like, oh, man, he won. Here's $1,000. You're like, why do all these guys have $1,000 on them?
Also, I mean, I guess I understand that's how they're able to get into like the house that they have randomly and afford all the dumb bullshit that they buy, is that Danny DeVito can do anything with his salesman abilities.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, I make a shitload of money. It just doesn't matter because I funnel it directly into the dumbest garbage possible.
Now, one more thing that I really wanted to talk about. We get a brief visit where the family goes into, or the Finches go over to visit the Halls, go into their house. And we see a bunch of nude paintings of Kristen Chenoweth because she used to do some modeling. And then we get to meet the twins.
Yeah,
Danny DeVito and Kristen Chenoweth's twin daughters.
The Hall children.
So the Hall twins, and I don't even know if we ever get their names, but they are basically 15 years old, blonde, dumb, and hot. It's the worst collection of dumb stereotypes.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, not just blonde, dumb, and hot as like, oh, we sort of present that. Throughout the entire movie, they're like, reading makes my brain feel funny.
A book? I'd rather have a boy.
Yeah. Ugh, goddamn.
And again, they're presented, if this isn't us saying that they're hot, this is the movie. It's like, these two 15-year-olds are fucking sexy.
Oh, yeah. And we get a lot of the lens of that through the 10-year-old boy who's like, just walking around this house going, my God, everything gives me a boner. Look at this painting of Kristen Chenoweth. Look at these hot 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
I'm like, movie, please.
Tone it down.
Please don't try and sexualize these 15-year-olds much.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, there's only one other 15-year-old in the movie, and it's, you know, Alia Shawkat's character, Cat, I want to say Cat or something like that.
I don't know.
Mandy? Something like that.
Mandy.
But anyway... It's just, hey, we'll teach you how to be sexy and you can teach us how to brain.
Yeah.
Is the whole arc for all three of them from now on.
Yeah, it's, oh, these are going to be my friends now.
Yeah. And then we get one line of useless, pointless setup for later when one of the dumb twins almost knocks over her mother's prize vase.
Oh, I need to find a place for this because this vase costs more than, like, the whole house.
Yeah, just that's there. They probably went back and added it to the movie later because they really needed a scene where they explained that the vase was important.
Yeah.
So okay, that's our visit into their house, which is also immediately decorated like your grandparents' house looks now. Like, the moment they move in, they're like, all right, let's get this carpet nice and dark yellow.
Oh, yeah, the whole house is, like, that dark wood paneling on the like, carpet is dark and the drapes are all sort of that like green and...
Yeah, they're kind of that cigarette smoke color. It's like they moved into a house and all they did was like rearrange the piles of old newspapers and radios that don't work.
Yeah,
just like, there, we'll just live here, we'll live in this weird hoarder squat.
Yeah, it very much looks like this place was decorated in the 70s and then that was good enough.
Yeah, and then someone just left some lit cigarettes in here for the past 30-40 years.
Yep.
So that's it's like, why did you move into this place? It's gross.
Yeah, it is. It's a weird house, and I love it. Everything's great about it.
So, okay, the daughters show Danny DeVito Google Earth, and they're like, look, you can't see our house. And he's like, I know. I'll put so many Christmas lights on the house, you can see it from space, I will.
Yeah, that's his big plan for this movie, is so many lights on the house, you can see the house from space. That's it.
That's
all he wants.
That's the big plan. Meanwhile, Finch's big plan is normal Christmas, every day of all December forever. And by God, nobody better put up any big Christmas light displays near me.
Yeah, for someone who's supposed to be the character that's like, yo, Christmas is my thing, as soon as Danny DeVito gets even remotely into Christmas, like before he goes overboard in the lights and nonsense,
right?
Like already Broderick is going, oh, this guy's putting up lights. And I'm like, dude, you're supposed to be the Christmas guy.
It's weird because he feels like his turf's being impeded on. Because he's like, he has a conversation with DeVito at one point where DeVito's like, yeah, I'm putting up some Christmas lights so I can be seen from space. It's my dreams, it is. And then Broderick's like, uh-huh, that's great. Hey, I'm the Christmas guy.
Look, this town has someone for basically every holiday, and I'm the Christmas dude.
Why don't you be Halloween? And I'm like, wait, you telling me that there's a guy for every holiday and no one took Halloween yet?
Yeah.
I would fight like fucking like a banshee to get Halloween.
Yeah, I would fight a literal banshee.
I would kill a banshee again to get Halloween as the holiday that I am the guy for. And you're telling me everyone in this fucking upscale Massachusetts shit pile doesn't want Halloween?
Yeah, no one here was like, oh yeah, Halloween, that's the thing I want to be in charge
of. Well, I'll take Arbor Day, but Lord save me from that awful Halloween.
Yeah, I don't want to be in charge of that. That's weird.
What the hell? But DeVito's like, no, man, I need to. I can't be. My house won't be seen from space with Halloween crap all over it.
Yeah.
It's got to be Christmas. So basically, he tries to, or DeVito is trying to do Christmas not because of any interest in Finch or winning or anything. He just wants his house to be seen from space.
Now, the weird thing for me is so much of the shit DeVito is going to do after this has nothing to do with his house being seen from space.
Yeah, this is a real problem.
Like, immediately, the dumbest scene we get to start with is he gets, like, a sleigh, like an actual four reels sleigh.
Yeah, you know, like an old-timey 1800s pulled by reindeer style sleigh.
And he gets two horses, duct tapes antlers to their head,
and sticks this whole fucking nightmare show in his yard. How is that helping him with his lumens?
Yeah, he's like, oh, I want to be seen from space. What will help with that is this horse-drawn sleigh.
Are you gonna put lights all over it? Oh, no.
No, it's just to be there. Like, he does this throughout the movie, and I keep going, dude, if you want to be seen from space, just get those fucking, like, giant ridiculous floodlights that shoot straight up.
Get some halogens and shit up in your lawn. Get strobe lights and things. Get that done. But the more you cover your lawn with wise men and candles and rotating Santas, the less space you have to pack in them lumens.
Yeah. But anyway, he gets this thing, and it is annoying Broderick because they're trying to take the Christmas photo, and...
Oh, God, the Christmas... And he keeps saying Christmas photo as if everyone knows what that is.
Look, we're trying to take our Christmas photo, like everyone knows what the Christmas photo is, but it's a tradition where they all wear dumb sweaters and take a picture together, which, okay, sure, that's fine.
That's fine. But, of course, because this is one of those slapstick Christmas movies, he can't just go outside and get in the car and drive to Sears and get this shit done.
Or when it's like, look, fucking Danny DeVito bought a goddamn sleigh. He can't be like, great, everyone sit down for 2 seconds. We're going to take a picture and then we'll go check out this sleigh. They have to immediately run outside. And then Danny's like, hey, why don't you take your picture in the sleigh?
I think that's actually a line they gave to Kristen Chenoweth just to give her something to fucking do. And she was like, oh, I got an idea. You can take your picture in the sleigh. And Broderick's like, no,
I am not about this.
I do not want to get in the. And of course, the son jumps in. You can already tell where this is going, dear listeners. They jump in the sleigh, and then as soon as the son gets out of the sleigh, the horses, which Danny DeVito, this is my favorite line in the fucking movie, Danny DeVito goes, by the way, you should be careful around them horses. They're real skittish. I found them on the edge of town.
What?
Explain this to me. All I want is this to be the movie from this point forward. I want this movie to be called Danny Hall Found Some Horses.
Also, you found skittish horses and were able to duct tape fucking antlers to them? That's not skittish.
And connect them correctly to a sleigh.
Yeah, no, these aren't skittish horses. These are the most docile fucking horses ever. You found someone's drug horse.
What? How did he find... I mean, when he says, I found horses on the edge of town, he means I stole some horses, right?
I have to imagine that means I went to a ranch on the edge of town and stole a couple of their horses.
I rustled these horses, is what I'm trying to tell you, Matthew Broderick. Now, I am a horse thief and deserve a hanging.
Of course, Broderick has to try and get his family out of the sleigh because that's not part of his tradition, but everyone else gets out and it's just him in there, and that's when the horses take off.
Yep, and so we get Matthew Broderick in a Santa costume, in a horse sleigh, being pulled all over friggin' tiny town Massachusetts, and slamming into walls and nearly hitting Fred Armisen, who's in this movie for some reason.
For some reason, Fred Armisen is here doing an accent because he is Fred Armisen.
Yeah, I feel like Fred Armisen don't do no movie unless he can do a dumb accent he's not that good at.
He's like, look, I'm going to do the world's shittiest German accent in your movie. And they're like, could you not?
We didn't hire you for that. We hired you because you were on Saturday Night Live or something. Could you just
be Fred Armisen for like a second?
Yeah, Fred Armisen does a dumb German accent, though. Fine.
Great, whatever.
Yeah, so he's in the movie as a German jogger who pops up from time to time.
Yeah.
The only other cameos in this thing of note are Jorge Garcia, who you'd remember as Hurley from Lost.
Yeah, he's some guy in town.
He's excited about Christmas a lot. And I can't remember his fucking name, but the guy who was the second lead in the 1990s movie Tomcats, the college comedy. You know the guy I'm talking about, John. He's one of the car dealer people. He has a face like he has a smile like an Ewok.
Yeah.
He is literally has, if you'll know him when you see him, you're like, oh, that fucking guy.
That guy.
He's in every shitty bro comedy. He's got an Ewok smile because he can't smile without his teeth popping up in the exact center.
Yeah, he's really got that that problem with the teeth going on where he's like, man, you smile and it looks like you got fake teeth.
It looks like he's doing a regular smile and someone put a sticker with a picture of some teeth in the middle of it.
He looks like one of those old cartoons where they superimpose the mouth on top of a cartoon.
Yeah, he's the living, breathing Clutch Cargo. You got it in one. Clutch Cargo, by the way, the oldest reference we'll ever do on the show. That said, we did do a bunch of Lewis Carroll at the beginning of this. Anyway, so
he goes through town, and then eventually the sleigh goes on the frozen river, breaks, and he goes under the ice.
The sleigh breaks specifically so that he doesn't drag horses to their death.
Oh yeah, the horses fly off
disconnect.
Yeah, and the sleigh goes off on its own.
Yeah, and then he falls into a frozen river in a sleigh in a Santa costume, and you know, dies, and that's the end of the movie.
And then credits roll.
Fred Armisen finishes off the movie with his interesting story, the story of why does this guy's German accent so bad, starts playing.
I
have the worst German accent.
No, he falls down into the lake, and then Werner Herzog comes on and narrates the end credits again.
Once again, nature has killed a man.
We see nature has given the man his final resting place.
Conspiring between the horses and the frozen water of the lake.
Here, man finds his true end in frozen, and now he will be forever perfect, and yet forever dead.
It is true, as they have said, since the days of the Gasco Caves, Danny DeVito will kill us all.
Yeah,
so I have met Danny DeVito on the set of one of my films.
I saw him eat a penguin.
In his eyes, I saw true nothingness, like the eyes of an ant. all right, so instead what actually happens is Broderick wakes up and he's naked and in the backseat of his own car and he's in a sleeping bag.
With Danny DeVito, who is also naked.
Because it was the only way to warm him up in time.
No, he's dead. Like, the he is far enough away from them, and they have no idea where he is, that I don't think the possibility of saving him existed, but whatever.
It's a Christmas miracle.
It's a Christmas miracle. He gets saved.
It's a dumb idiot Christmas miracle that Danny DeVito buys a $5,000 wooden sleigh, straps stolen horses to it, and immediately loses it in the town lake.
And doesn't care.
Also, it's back later in the film, which means he has the damn thing dredged from the lake.
Yeah, well, they got to break up the ice, get down there, dredge the thing out, fix it.
Yeah, and then put it back on his lawn.
Or he just bought a new sleigh.
Buys another sleigh. Who gives a fuck? So he has to go to the hospital with naked Danny DeVito. And of course, all this prompts him to do is go, ah, you know, like he just sort of yells and that's the end of the scene.
Yeah, now normally I woke up naked next to Danny DeVito. Of course, your standard reaction is going to be to yell in horror.
Yeah.
But this sets up a precedent for Matthew Broderick's character, which is that he is, he's not the greatest, because at some point he's going to make a complaint to the police.
Oh, yeah, and that's... So basically, at a certain point, the escalation in their battle leads Danny DeVito to put giant speakers on his lawn that are constantly blasting Christmas music, as well as Danny DeVito's pre-recorded DJ segments.
Yeah, it's tons of lights, tons of those stupid decorations that are, like, always moving and, like, waving, and then he's got all of his music that is playing.
Now, at a certain point, all the noise prompts Matthew Broderick to think to himself, oh, good, now I can at least get him on a noise complaint. And so he goes to the local police. He goes to see them in person. Now, he has been told early in the film by the mayor, who says, I'm not much of a gossip, and I can keep excellent secrets, Matthew Broderick, but for example, I know a secret that the police chief is a cross-dresser.
And I've never told anyone until now.
Yes. So he goes and he speaks to the police chief. And the police chief has a strap peeking out from under his police uniform. He's also grumpy because he doesn't want to take a noise complaint. He's like, you sure you want to make a noise complaint? It's Christmas. And first of all, he's like, no, it's not Christmas. It's December 15th.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, one, fuck you, do your job. And Two, I don't care if you're grumpy. I'm making a complaint.
It's a real noise complaint. There are actual laws about noise. So,
and the other thing is, it's also a light complaint as well. Because yes. It's, look, it is actual for reals light pollution. You can't do this.
Yeah, you have to go get this guy to tone down. Call me a Scrooge or whatever, but he is breaking the law.
Yeah.
So anyway, he goes to see the police chief, and there's a strap peeking out from under his police shirt. And he goes, Matthew Broderick says, Are you wearing a bra? And the man goes, no, this is a brace my wife made for me because I dislocated my shoulder. How ridiculous are you? And Broderick's like, you're right.
Oh, okay. All right. I feel much better now knowing that you're not wearing a bra.
Now, at this point, the police chief, I'll take the police chief here and you can have Broderick because you can get the good part. The police chief goes, well, fine. I guess if you're going to be a real Christmas asshole, I'll go get a noise complaint. They're in one of the files back behind me. All right, here I go. I'm going to walk over that way. I got to bend over real low and stay that way for a long time so I can find this noise complaint. Oh no, my big pink thong is poking out.
Woo! And Broderick runs away scared like Weasley just got caught by Snape.
Yep. Like okay, so in all of these movies, in every shitty Christmas Dad Christmas, there's a scene where someone very obviously is breaking the law a whole lot, and you need a big contrivance for why the cops don't get involved. So, for example, in Christmas with the Cranks, what happens is the cops are too dumb and also too good of friends.
Well, they tried to sell them a calendar,
yes.
And because the Cranks didn't buy it, they're like, well, maybe we would have helped you out if you had bought a calendar. And I'm like, you're fucking police officers.
And there's not just two police officers in town. Go above their heads.
Yeah.
But in every movie, there's a dumb shit reason why the cops aren't involved, even though they very clearly should be. In this movie, the reason is because Matthew Broderick is too afraid of a man in women's underwear to talk to him.
Yeah, he runs away without filling out this complaint because he sees a thong on a police officer, and it makes him so scared that he, like, runs away with his arms a-flailing, wiggling his fingers like, ooh!
He runs away like C-3PO would run towards a police officer in a thong.
Oh, my. Oh, goodness.
Oh, goodness. I have several interesting volumes on human love poetry.
Like, it is... It's one of the scenes in there where I go, I understand that just like a horror movie has to give you some reason why people don't have cell phones anymore, mm-hmm. that you still have to do this, but please pick something else aside from Matthew Broderick is a terrible person.
Yeah, I mean, this is literally Matthew Broderick is afraid of women's underwear.
Yeah.
Is the reason why the cops aren't in this film.
Yeah, he's so terrified of the idea of someone cross-dressing that he is willing to let his family suffer for it.
What is this?
What
a horrible scene.
Yeah. God.
The only good thing is that the police chief straight up gets a redemption towards the end of the movie.
Oh, fucking Broderick at one point is like, I've had enough. I'm going to shoot fireworks at Danny DeVito's house.
What the fuck was that?
Like, okay, I understand if he was like, I'm going to set fireworks off because his lights are annoying me, so I'm going to set fireworks off to annoy him.
Yeah.
But it's not I'm setting fireworks off. It's I am literally shooting fireworks at this guy's house.
Yeah, and it's not to try and set his house on fire. His stated intent is to give DeVito a heart attack.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm going to scare him so bad he has a heart attack. And I'm like, okay, one, yes, you are definitely trying to set this guy's house on fire. Two, even if you are actually honest about wanting to do this to, like, scare Danny DeVito, you're saying you are attempting murder, and you are doing this because you are too scared to talk to someone in women's underwear.
Yes. Well, anyway, he goofs up because it's a Christmas Dad movie, and he's on a roof, which is the, you know, the hell of Christmas dads.
Oh, yeah, if you're a Christmas dad and you get on a roof, you better be prepared for bullshit slapstick.
Surround that house with trampolines. Anyway, he drops a giant rocket down his own chimney and it goes flying around in his house and sets his Christmas tree on fire and blows a hole out the wall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of dumb shit in this that, I mean, I don't even think we can get into, but it's weird things where there will be scenes where it's like, he has his own Christmas tree lot.
Yeah, that was weird. He has his own fenced off Christmas tree lot in the middle of the town Christmas tree lot.
Yeah, where he grows his own personal Christmas trees, and he's going to chop one down, and DeVito accidentally knocked over a gas can. So when Broderick, like, hits the axe against one of the poles holding up the tree, it sparks and sends flames and it burns down all of his trees. Oh no. Now, in this one, this was fairly early-ish in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I'm still thinking, oh, the whole thing with Danny DeVito's character is it's going to seem like he's trying to sabotage stuff, but he's just sort of a schlub and he didn't mean to do anything. And eventually Broderick will get over it. But then later in the movie, Danny DeVito straight up forges Matthew Broderick's character's name on a document to give him a car.
Yes. And he's like, hey, I know your car got destroyed because you foolishly tried to drive it when it was completely surrounded by cars that were in the neighborhood to look at my house.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens. He puts up some fancy light display again. A whole bunch of neighbors come to see, and they box in Broderick's car, who gets so mad that he tries to drive it out anyway and tears his own doors off.
Yeah, so Broderick's an idiot, tears his own doors off.
And then DeVito responds, because he heard about something. I think it was that he heard about the explosion, the house burning.
Well, no, it's because the Christmas tree lot burned down. He's like,
oh, yeah.
I got you a Christmas tree and a car.
Here's a brand new car. I won't take no for an answer. And it's a gift from me to you. Turns out it's not a gift. He forged Broderick's signature and sold Broderick a car, which he also took commission on.
Yeah, he's like, look, you got to pay for this car by the end of the day or we're going to like put you in jail. And my gift portion was I took a small hit on my commission for it. And you're like, Danny DeVito, you're a criminal.
That's fraud.
That is straight up you are going to jail fraud.
I would go to the police if they didn't have women's underwear.
But Broderick then goes, oh, well, I'll go to my lawyer because at least I know my lawyer is a straight man who doesn't wear any women's underwear. And Danny DeVito calls him a wimp for trying to do this.
Yeah, he basically just uses the chicken defense.
He's like, oh, you're going to go to a lawyer? You got to hide behind a lawyer instead of settling this like a man? And then when Broderick's like, fine, I will fight you outside right now. I will fucking throw bows at you.
Yeah.
DeVito's like, oh no, I just meant we should do ice skating.
Yeah, we'll have an ice skate down the town square.
Apparently the Winter Festival has a speed skating event, and Danny DeVito is going to challenge Matthew Broderick to speed skating for a car. The fact that Matthew Broderick is like, okay, here's the deal. If I win, you take down the lights, and if you win, I'll pay for the car. Whereas I'm sitting there going, or I go to a lawyer, and you go to jail, and I have the police take down your lights, and I win everything. Fuck you, Danny DeVito.
Yeah, but then I wouldn't be manly, which apparently is a thing I was worried about.
Oh my god, this Winter Festival is ridiculous.
Oh, there's we gotta talk about the Winter Festival scene Yeah, okay.
The reason we're getting to the Winter Festival is specifically for, there is a moment
where Kristen Chenoweth are like, you two need to work out your differences. God damn it, we're friends. We've started talking about cookbooks quietly in the background.
So, you don't know it, but we've got some sort of B plot going on that doesn't matter.
There's a whole subplot happening back there, but in the meantime, you two are going to talk it out until you find out something you have in common. God damn it. And then they leave the two of them alone in the Christmas pageant festival, at which point
the announcer says, welcome to the stage, the Santa babies.
So, okay, we got three women dressed in, you know, Santa-style miniskirt combos.
Yeah, that sexy Santa combo.
Yeah, they got sexy Santa, they got the fishnets, and they got their underwear showing, and they're not facing towards the crowd, so a lot of butt work. And they sing in Santa Baby, the worst Christmas song there is.
And so, of course, this prompts the two of them to be like,
hootin'.
Steve, we don't see eye to eye on everything, but we can see eye to eye on that. Look at them girls.
Look at them dancing girls.
A little something for daddy.
Oh, speaking of which, says Matthew Broderick, before yelling, who's your daddy, over and over and over and over again, as if it was his catchphrase. He just keeps getting louder. He's out there going, who's your daddy, in his crappy, tiny little baby man Matthew Broderick voice. Oh, who is your daddy, he says. Who indeed may be your daddy?
you've gone way too far. You've become the Funky Phantom.
Oh. Who's your daddy, even?
Daddy, stage right, even.
Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, look at those posteriors.
Yeah.
All right, well, of course, as if it wasn't predictable, the three women turn around, and they're the three women you forgot were in this movie. They're daughters.
And that prompts Danny DeVito and Matthew Broderick to wash their eyes out with holy water in the local church.
Yeah, they're taking turns taking big dips into the holy water fountain, throwing it into their faces like jack-offs.
Yeah, I have to imagine that the priest that is at this church is like, the fuck are you two idiots doing?
Oh, sorry. We got to boil some pasta after this, too. Can we take some of this?
You mind? I know this is your baptismal font, but can I just take a dump in that?
Hey, I went ahead and put my baby in this. He's going to shit in there. That's how he does it.
That's how we do. Anyway, you got any more of that sacrificial wine?
Hey, bring some more of them sacrificial wine and holy water out here.
Sacramental, not sacrificial. Jesus Christ.
It's definitely sacrificial wine.
Sacrificial wine. Yeah, we kill this wine for God.
You got to stab the side and shotgun it for Jesus.
Shotgun wine for Jesus.
They're just being jerk-offs. Like, that's not a nice thing to do to the local priest's holy water. Go, it's your fucking fault you decided to hoot and holler at people who turned out to be your kids.
Yeah.
Maybe you could have been like the rest of the crowd and not yelling hoots as loud as you could.
Yeah, the rest of the crowd is just, like, standing there silently watching this display.
Well, of course they're standing there silently. It's a slow rock version of Santa Baby, which was already the worst Christmas song.
Fucking, of course, all of this means that the two families have had enough. Both of the Kristens are done with their respective husbands' bullshit.
Yes, and so all the families move out, leaving Broderick and DeVito alone in their big empty Christmas houses, where they both just immediately cave. And they're just like, oh, we're both sad. Oh, but before this, we get the one scene of the Christmas cookbook discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Where Kristen Davis and Kristen Chenoweth are sitting at a table, and Kristen Chenoweth goes, you know what? I think you could write a cookbook if you wanted. And she's like, yeah, Kristen Davis says, I could write a cookbook. And you know what? I'll write a cookbook for real moms who have to cook for real kids. That's something everyone needs. No one's ever done that.
Yeah, no, that's not literally every cookbook that isn't a coffee table book about meals you'll never prepare.
Yeah, literally every book that isn't by Julia Child is for real moms.
Yeah.
It's always like, oh, here's how you microwave a bowl of pizza. Oh, cut up hot dogs in your oatmeal.
Yeah, the fact that she's going to do this is great, whatever.
But the best part is that
no bearing. The best part, Kristen Chenoweth is going to help her out, and she has an idea for what it should be called.
Yeah, she says, I know exactly what you could call it. Food, the guide to real mom's cooking.
Yep, that's it. I had a meme for what my name would be, and I got food.
What the fuck? I don't understand. It's like when she's like, food, and Kristen Davis is like, yeah, food, because that's like that thing that happened earlier in the movie that got cut, apparently.
Food.
What? Why is there even
invited food?
Damn it, food.
You always fuck everything up, food.
Food's just over there keeping his head under his paws.
Oh
gosh.
Oh, food.
Damn it, food. So, okay.
Food brought a casserole, but it's just cheese and a hot dog sticking out of it.
Hey, that's perfect for real moms.
Real moms and real food.
Yes. God damn it. So that subplot terminates. There's also a scene before they move out where the little boy helps Matthew Broderick try to sabotage. Here's a fun thing. Danny DeVito has been managing all the way through the movie to steal Matthew Broderick's power.
Yeah, he like has a bunch of extension cables that he has run over to Matthew Broderick's house because he doesn't have enough power to run all of these dumb lights.
And he covers it all with snow so that Matthew Broderick never finds out all of his power is being stolen. Well, at a certain point, Broderick decides to put on a spy costume and sneak over there and unplug the lights.
Yep.
And the little son gets involved, but he loses interest right away because while he's on a pole, he can see the hot twins having a pillow fight.
Fuck you, movie.
And then, you know, that leads to one of my other favorite lines in the movie where the little boy gets stuck up on the telephone pole and Danny DeVito is like, is that your son on that telephone pole? And they're like, yeah, we're going to have him looked at later.
Yeah. Good. Great. Thanks.
You're
going to
have him looked at? What? What are any of these lines?
What are you even talking about?
And then, of course, they have their big ice skating event where Matthew Broderick loses at the last minute because he gets tripped by the mayor or something.
Yeah.
So he falls down, and DeVito, who is a terrible skater, manages to skate in and win. And he's like, I win. You got to pay for the car. Yay. I win.
And Broderick's like, well, even if I do pay for the car, your house is still fucking invisible. How does it feel like to be nothing?
Yeah.
And then everyone is like, fuck you, Broderick. Aww. How dare you?
How dare you be mean to that man who just fraudulently sold you a car and has been polluting the entire town?
How dare you be mad at a person who is aggressively awful and has committed like ridiculous amounts of crimes against you.
Imagine if just the Mr. Grinch movie was a shitty dad Christmas movie and they'd be like, how dare you get mad at Mr. Grinch even though he stole all the town's presents?
Look, don't you know he's sad?
Look, he's shrinking away from you because you're threatening to strike him. Aw, don't be mean to Mr. Grinch.
The The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous.
It's just, anyway, all the family leaves and they go to a hotel room where they're decorating a little palm tree in a hotel room, and we get a wrap up for the storyline for Alia Shawkat and the twins, because it turns out she's taught the twins to read, Emily Dickinson.
Oh, I can read this and it doesn't even hurt my brain.
And that's the full extent of their story and we're done.
Good.
There's no resolution for the part where they have to deal with the fact that their dads were actively hooting at their butts.
Nope, there is nothing that has to do with that.
Nope.
The way that the two of them are going to get their respective families back, though, is DeVito takes down all of his lights.
Yeah, he's
and creates a light tunnel from their hotel room to the DeVito household.
Now, this is Christmas Eve when this is happening. It's the middle of the night on Christmas Eve, and he goes outside with Matthew Broderick's help because the two have decided to bury the hatchet because they're lonely on Christmas.
Yeah, they want their families back.
They want their families back. So they build a giant trap maze tunnel of lights from the hotel room all the way back to Broderick's house. Now, this must take fucking forever, and it's insane to think about how they're managing to turn all these lights on.
Yeah, well, it's like miles
yes.
of this, because they have to create like a pathway of lights from a motel to a front door.
And let's point out that it goes right down the middle of town.
Yeah, when they're walking through this little path of lights, we do see them go through downtown.
They're in both lanes of traffic. This thing is in the exact center of the road.
Yeah, and of course, you know, this doesn't stop anyone from doing anything.
It also really begs the question of how is it all standing up? Did they literally drill a bunch of holes to get all these poles and stuff to stay where, like, they are? They're in the street.
Where is the power for this coming from?
How is any of this working?
What is happening right now?
Why are the people? And then also, it completely works, and both families get bundled up so they can go walk down this light maze out of stuff that is. And they're all confused. They're like, "What is this? It's a Christmas path.
It's some kind of path of lights.
Well, it's clearly made out of all the shit that was all over your dad's house." I mean, it's real obvious. Look, there's that Santa from his front lawn. There's half that camel he had in his lawn for a while. I don't know why he cut that up. That's not glowing.
Yeah, I gotta mention that. Like I said with the sleigh earlier, there is a point where he gets a full nativity scene and a real camel for no reason.
Oh, it's so it can spit on Matthew Broderick.
It's so he can shit on Matthew.
It doesn't
Broderick.
Shit on him though. It just
oh, it shits on him.
It just spits at him. It spits gross tobacco green ooze at him. And also, he hires a bunch of wise men to just stand around in his yard 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I don't.
This is not increasing your lumens. Maybe if they're all on their cell phones all the time.
I mean, the other thing is we get points where the reason Chenoweth leaves is because DeVito hawks the vase to pay for all this.
Yeah, he keeps buying more lights.
And, okay, we understand that he has a money problem then when it comes to paying for all this dumb shit, but he's still buying stuff like a camel and Wiseman instead of stuff that will actually help him.
Yes, it's insane. The money in this movie makes no fucking sense, and it never does in Christmas Dad movies.
Well, yeah, because at the end, when they follow the path of lights back to the house, DeVito's like, "Yep, I got your vase back.
Here's your vase. We can never use our credit cards again.
Because apparently my credit card has a $300,000 limit."
Yeah, so he gets the vase back, and they didn't have time to cook a real Christmas dinner, so instead they cooked the horrible food from Kristen Davis's cookbook.
Yeah, oh, look at all these dishes on the table.
Oh, fiesta corn.
This is food.
It's food. Look at that. It's a plate of mashed potatoes with meatballs randomly stuck throughout.
Oh, look, someone made a yam, and they made it look like a reindeer head?
There was a gourd that was decorated as a reindeer head in the center of the table, as if it was food.
Yeah.
And then, I gotta say, meatballs in mashed potatoes is not something you make at first. That is a leftovers dish.
Yeah, it is like a giant thing of mashed potatoes and then a ring of meatballs in it. And I'm like, who makes that?
That's not fast. You can't make that quickly. You have to make mashed potatoes, and then you also have to make meatballs, and then you have to combine them. It'd be much faster to just make something that doesn't have mashed potatoes in it.
No, I mean, you can make mashed potatoes and meatballs as a thing, but putting it all in one, like, casserole dish, I go, there's no reason to do that.
This is leftovers. This is how you make, you got a bunch of leftover mashed potatoes and some ground beef? Make some meatball mashed potatoes. Whatever. That's what this is.
Yeah, but the fact that it's in the dish, I'm like, no one's cooking the meatballs with the mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
You aren't going to cook mashed potatoes in a fucking casserole dish to begin with.
Well, yeah,
what is happening here?
That's how I make shepherd's pie, to be fair.
Yeah,
to be fair.
That's shepherd's pie, not just mashed potatoes. I'm not making mashed potatoes in a dish by itself.
Well, anyway, the folks make their way back through this stupid tunnel of lights, And they get to the house, and Broderick and DeVito are just standing there fighting because they're like, I'm better at cooking than you. Your fiesta corn is very unpleasant. That kind of thing. They're bickering. And then the families come in, and they're both just like, hi, we didn't have time to make a real turkey, so we made stuff from your cookbook. They never go like, we're sorry we went all crazy about fucking Christmas in each of our own dumb ways. They're just like, here's some food, and as you can see, we spent a lot of time making an extremely inconvenient to everyone in town trail down the middle of the street. So can we have sex now? And they're all like, yay, we love you, family. Everyone together.
Oh, but now you'll never achieve your dream of having your house seen from space, and MTV is coming by.
Yeah, also, we keep checking in with a British weather station that can tell whether or not his house is visible from space.
No, it's the people who run the Google Earth equivalent of the movie.
It's Cal Penn.
Yeah, Cal Penn is there for 5 seconds at a time, like, hi, I'm British, and I'm running the Google Earth equivalent of this movie.
Yeah, Cal Penn's in this movie less than Hurley.
Yep.
It's just, what are you doing here, Cal Penn? The house cannot be seen from space. Okay, thank you, Cal Penn.
All right, goodbye.
All right, let's check in with Cal Penn. My mother just brought us a tin of crisps, and his house can be seen from space.
Yay.
The end. That's
I'll have a spot of tea.
That's the full extent of Cal Penn in this movie.
Yeah.
It's just, what happened there? But anyway, it turns out that because Matthew Broderick is such a good ophthalmologist, he is owed a favor from everyone in town. So what he does is, at midnight on Christmas Eve, he makes all of them take down their own Christmas lights and bring them over to Danny DeVito's house and pile them all over Danny DeVito's house such that his house can be seen from space.
Yeah, and there's a point where they try and turn it on, it doesn't go on, so everyone has to sing Oh Holy Night instead.
Yeah, mostly that's just because someone remembered that Kristen Chenoweth is in this fucking thing.
They were like, oh shit, that's right, we hired you, we haven't given you anything to do, but especially not a song yet, so here, you can go diva up Oh Holy Night for a second.
So she goes over and does what Kristen Chenoweth was brought to this earth for, which is to be an angel and sing Oh Holy Night, but it doesn't make any sense, because in this movie there's never been a point where they're like, by the way, my wife's the greatest singer in the history of Broadway.
Anyway, that's a thing she does. Nope, never mentioned, and it doesn't matter to the plot, because as soon as she's done doing the Oh Holy Night, the 10-year-old boy's like, oh, the problem was you just didn't plug it in all the way.
So he plugs it in, giant super lights fire to the space, and the house is now visible from space, and all of the people at the weather center get blinded by their computers. And then Matthew Broderick's like, yay, I love Christmas. How about instead of traditions, we just have fun? And then Danny DeVito's like, I like this town. I think I'll stays what's in it, what's what.
Oh, I think I finally found a place I could be content at.
And then the end.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah. We didn't really get to the part I really wanted to mention, which was that when Matthew Broderick accidentally burns down part of his house, the underwear-wearing police chief makes his way back into the movie, where he straight up insults Broderick, and he's like, this kind of looks like you did this to your own fucking house like an idiot, you dipshit. You're really putting a twist in my panties. And then he stomps off, and I was like, fuck yeah, buddy. You own that piece of shit.
Well, no, because the whole point was panties in a twist is a saying, and then Broderick gets to go, oh, he mentioned panties.
Well, he doesn't say panties in a twist. He specifically says, you're becoming a real knot in my panties, buddy. A real knot in my panties. And I was like, ah, he knows. And he knows that's why Broderick left. He's like, oh, another fucking creepo who's terrified of my whale tail, huh? Well, I'll show him later. This is my mental headcanon. Don't take this away from me.
No, I'm taking it away from
no,
you.
The police.
This is like when you ruined the Saving Christmas for me. No, that whole point of it is to say, no, it's just there to make Broderick uncomfortable again.
No.
Because saying that a man might wear panties is the most horrific thing possible.
No, this is still Broderick being uncomfortable, but what I'm doing is giving some agency to the police chief. He knows what a piece of shit Broderick is, and he's rubbing it in his fucking face. This is his Julia Roberts, you messed up big time moment.
No.
You can't take it away. It's firm. It's up here, John. It's up here. Let the listeners know I'm pointing at my head.
It's up here. Let them know that I'm pointing at my trophy.
Please, for my own edification, how could I be the one who ruined Saving Christmas for you? Saving Christmas is unrepentant shit.
It is a giant pile.
There was some point where you liked it until I did something. Please elucidate.
No, it was where I was saying that I think the gay guy in there is straight up gay and is fine with it. And then you were like, no, he's repressed gay. And if you think otherwise, then you're a bad person.
I'm right. I'll go ahead and stay on that hill then.
Yeah.
Let the lightning come, because that dude does not know he's gay. He thinks he's just super Christian-y.
He just thinks he's Christian-y.
Yeah, we're both talking about the dude who won't stop with the Christian phrases in the middle of that movie.
Yes.
Where you're just like, he's just like, hey man, Jesus is the reason and the season for pleasing his power, and the power is the Lord is within us, and oh my God, and I can't believe what they're doing with Crazy Shirt Friday. And you're like, dude, please say a human word. Please, for the love of God, connect me as one man to another.
for the love of God, please just say words to me that aren't some weird nonsense.
Ah, I'll tell you what's some weird nonsense. Not believe in Jesus, because Jesus is the man, and the man is the power, and the power is the light, and the light is the way, my friend. Also, I'd like to suck a dick.
Yep. just straight up would love that for Christmas, if you could. If you could just set up an entire panoply of dicks for
Christmas
me.
Christmas dicks.
If you could just set it up so it looks like the skyline of a new dick Jerusalem.
The skyline of a new dick Jerusalem.
Well, there you go. That's all I want for Christmas. The skyline of a new dick Jerusalem.
Oh, man. Please go back and listen to our Saving Christmas review. I've done it every Christmas, actually, since we reviewed it, which I think is two now. And it is... I'm so mad still.
It's still just the worst.
So...
Anyway.
This one's over, though.
Deck the Halls. We had a couple of shitty dads. Let me... we're going to get to our best and worst, but I want to say, as far as shitty dads go, how do you rate these shitty dads?
Okay. So let's see. I'm not really sure how I'm going to work for my scale on this. Shittiest dads are going to have to be people like Mr. Popper of the Mr. Popper's Penguins movie, or Arnold from
Hey Arnold.
From Hey Arnold. Yeah, the famous Arnold from Hey Arnold. They never really mention his kids.
Yeah.
But
he's a real fucking dirtbag. He owes so much
hey
back.
Hey Arnold, says some woman waving an alimony check.
Hey Arnold, your kids are hungry.
Hey Arnold, there's a restraining order. You can't be in that alleyway. No, all right. So, I mean, they're both pretty shitty dads, because they managed to go...
Who wins shittiest dad in this? Is it Broderick or DeVito?
DeVito is better to his daughters throughout the course of this movie than Broderick is to his kids. However, DeVito straight up bankrupts his family so he can be seen from space. I'm going to have to give him shittiest dad.
There you go.
I would also give him shittiest person because of all the fraud and crime.
Yeah, I feel like...
But those are two different ratings.
Yeah, as far as like to his family goes, I think DeVito is a better dad.
He certainly... There's no point where he has anything but lovely things to say about his kids.
No, he loves his kids. He loves his wife.
Yeah.
It's like he's super into them. I'd say he's a better dad, but he is a way shittier person.
Yes. So we're going to give Broderick the Worst Dad, Better Person award.
Yeah.
Which the only reason really we're giving Broderick Worst Dad is because he literally forgets what his son's problem is.
Yeah. He doesn't care about anything.
Also because he spends, 5 minutes repeatedly yelling, "Who's your daddy?" into maybe Blue's ass.
Just like my fanfic.
So that's a problem. So yeah, what we're saying is, in the great pantheon of shitty dads, I don't know, we need a rating scale for shitty dadness.
I don't know, man.
So we'll say number one, the best possible Christmas dad, is the dad from A Christmas Story, who never does anything wrong all the way through the movie, is a good dad, gives his kids presents, and is just sort of obsessed with eating turkey in the background.
Yeah, he's just a good, solid dad.
Yeah, so he's going to be the best Christmas dad. The worst Christmas dad is, let's say, Tim Allen, Santa Claus.
So bad that he has to become Christmas.
He has to literally become Christmas in order to atone for how shitty of a dad he is.
Yeah.
So let's say on a scale from the dad from Christmas Story to Tim Allen, where are these guys? We'll set them as 1 and 10.
On a scale of 1 to Tim Allen,
yeah,
how
one
are
to
these
Tim
guys?
Allen. They're about an Arnold.
So let's do our best and worst. Okay, best thing in the movie for you.
Let's see. The best thing in this movie for me is the part that you refuse to acknowledge exists, which is the part where the police chief gets his due. But if I'm going with one that we can both agree is actually a good part of the movie and does exist for both of us,
uh-huh,
it's got to be Kristen Chenoweth's A Holy Night song, because she's got the voice of a goddamn angel, and it was nice to have that finally come out and just be a thing that was okay.
There you go.
All right, so what would you say was your favorite part?
My favorite part is definitely when they suggest that the book be called Food Food.
Food Food!
It is the only thing I laughed at during the movie.
It's a complete non sequitur.
It's just like, we'll call it Food Food. I'm like, what?
The best part about her saying we'll call it Food Food is that everyone in the room is like, yeah, Food Food.
Like, everyone is immediately on board, like, this is the best idea you've ever had.
Oh my God, keep her talking while that lightning's in the bottle.
It is amazing how on board everyone is with food.
Yes, so that's very good. You're right.
All right, worst thing in the movie. Is it shouting into Maybe Bluth's ass?
No, because at least that happens in a wide shot. The worst thing in this movie is Matthew Broderick running away like a terrified C-3PO because he saw a man in women's underwear.
It's so true. It's the worst.
It's insane. Can you imagine? I mean, think of the most homophobic person you know. If they were at the police station looking for help, would they run off if they saw some women's underwear?
No,
because
definitely
they have
not.
They still have a goal to accomplish.
Yeah, if I'm at a police station to make a complaint, if I'm like, huh, there is some quirk about this officer, whatever, I don't care.
Yeah, it's completely insane and so insensitive. It's just insulting.
And even if you are that much of a terrible person, the fact that he wouldn't go, can I actually talk to that officer instead of you?
Yeah. No, he gives up on his goal and flees the police station never to return.
Yep. I want to give a special shout out, though, to Danny DeVito straight up forging a signature and foisting off a $50,000 car on Matthew Broderick.
Which, notably, Matthew Broderick can absolutely pay for.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to.
He's like, aw, I didn't want to buy that car. I guess I will, though.
But it doesn't make sense. If he was completely flush with the power to just buy another car, why did he spend the middle third of this movie driving around in a beater with no door?
This movie.
It doesn't add up. And this is one of those things where I hate rich people in Christmas movies. Because every once in a while, they'll suddenly get worried about money. You know, Christmas with the Cranks, where he's like, hon, I'm worried because we've been spending $6,000 a year on Christmas every year for years. Let's stop doing that and instead spend $4,000 on a cruise.
Okay, one, you have $6,000 to spend on Christmas. You can cold suck a dick.
Yeah. What the fuck are you even spending $6,000?
I need you to take up residence in my New Jerusalem.
Oh, God. The dick line of a New Jerusalem. Okay, so yeah, that's definitely the money in this movie is the money in this movie deserves an honorable mention. But yeah. What is your actual least favorite thing?
I mean, it's the Broderick scene. It definitely is him running away from the police station because good Lord, why?
Yeah,
so we'll give it our rating. We'll both do a 0 to 5 for a rating out of 10. Jeff, deck the halls.
0.5 because I'm a huge fan of Alia Shawkat.
Great.
That's all. Oh, and for Kristen Chenoweth singing.
Yeah, I think I may join you on a 0.5. I was almost going to give it a 1. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? Fuck it. I'll give it a 1.
Okay.
It's watchable.
I like almost every one of the actors whose name I know in this movie.
Yeah, that's the problem I have with it, is I'm like, it's eminently watchable because the actors are at least competent, if not doing their best.
I like Kristen Chenoweth. I like Matthew Broderick. I love Danny DeVito.
Oh, yeah. Danny DeVito is amazing.
I'm a huge fan of Alia Shawkat. I love all these people. I even like Jorge Garcia a whole lot. And he gets like 3 lines of this movie, and I was happy to see him.
Also true.
I would happily leave Fred Armisen to drown in a freezing river.
Oh, don't be mean to Fred Armisen.
Oh, Fred Armisen deserves it. Fuck Portlandia.
Aww.
If I want to watch two people jerk themselves off in slightly different costumes, I can just...
I will go to the New Jerusalem.
I'll figure it out, but I don't need to... Oh, fucking Portlandia. Anyway, but most of the actors in this movie I love, but they're wasted here.
Yeah. I'll give it a 1, so we'll have a 1.5 total for Deck the Halls.
That still might be our greatest thing we've ever given a Christmas movie.
Yeah, Christmas movie ratings, man, they need their own rating scale, because it is, whoo, baby, it's bad.
We'll have to do a baby it's bad outside rating.
On a scale of 1 to it's cold outside, how bad was this?
Well, this song wasn't originally about rape, but the context sure has changed over the ensuing 70 years, so I'm going to have to give it a 1.5.
Deck the Halls, 1.5. That was our rambling nonsense review that was sort of all over the place. But
well, get ready, because there's more coming.
Oh, yeah, we are ready. We're going to have a special event. We're going to review more movies than we probably should this month, just for you.
And we're busy. I don't even know how I'm going to fit it in, but we're doing it.
Oh, we're going to fit it in.
Yep. We're going to oil it up and New Jerusalem that shit. Man, we're going to get a lot of emails about that, by the way.
I'm fine with that.
All right.
Trump can go ahead and set up his embassy in my new Jerusalem, if you know what I mean.
Oh, my. That sounds like a gross invitation.
That is the grossest invitation. So, thank you so much for listening to Movie Mastery. We will, of course, be back with more stuff. If you want to vote on our in theaters now, it is not set in stone, I think.
No, it's
Jumanji's ahead, but you have time to change
you
that.
You can fix it. It doesn't need to be Jumanji. That
said, it probably will be.
I don't mind watching Jumanji. I love The Rock.
Yeah, it's The Rock and Kevin Hart dicking around for like two hours.
What's her name from Doctor Who and stuff,
It does indeed have Kristen Gillian.
Karen Gillan. Karen Gillan, who I'm a huge fan of as well. So that's, I mean, come on. That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. So that'll be fine. Oh, and Jack Black's in it. Meh.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. You can go to the website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com. Go to the Movie Mastery tab in theaters now. That's where you'll find all of our polls for when we put up the in theaters now poll for the various months. That'll be up there. You can do that. If you want to check out any of the other podcasts while you're there, we have a whole ton of content we do in
System
addition to this.
System Mastery and After... Well, we used to do Afterthought. System Mastery.
Well, I mean, check out Afterthought anyway.
You've got a whole bunch of them. You can go listen to the 50-something of them that are there. Then you've got Gamma Crawl and Expanded Universe. That's some good shit. People are loving that.
So check that out. We just started a new book, so if you want to jump onto that, that's just starting up.
Now's the time to do it.
And other than that, if you want to support us, you can technically still go to patreon.com/systemmastery. We're still on there, even though Patreon is being a huge pain in the butt.
Yeah, they're being the big Grinch of this year's Christmas. If you want to donate $1 to us, it'll cost you $1.38. Don't ask me why.
But the nice thing is, the more you donate, the less the percentage problem is for you.
Oh, perfect.
So instead of donating $1, maybe give us $5.
Hey, folks, if you send in $20 today, you'll not only join our producers club, but we'll send you this handy tote bag.
I tell you what, if you want to, what you need to do is you need to send some money in. Now, that's the seed for your prosperity.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
We're getting into that prosperity gospel.
What you need to do is anoint the dollar that we're going to send back to you with the holy oils we include in the package. Once you've done that, you need to send us that holy anointed dollar plus an additional $5, and that'll start the prayer chain that'll bring the prosperity ringing down upon you like rain from heaven. Man, I wasted my life, didn't I? I should have been a prosperity gospel idiot.
Oh, yeah. You should have. You should have been bilking people for money in a way worse way than this.
Oh, my gosh. That would have been... Folks, please donate to our Patreon to stop me from killing 1 million Midwesterners through starvation by taking all their money by promising them Jesus prayers.
You can go do that. Or if you have a problem with Patreon, which we fully understand, we have put up, if you want to help donate to the cause, we've got our PayPal donation site up there.
You'll find a new button on our website that just says, give us some money.
It just says, give us some money, and that way we can continue to eat and live and put out content.
That's the only way it works.
So, just go check that out. Of course, we will be back in another couple of weeks with some more Movie Mastery, but until then, you have a good one.